Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of this show, recognize that they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustments to be an amazing person, share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength, capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders, deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint, part of Late Night Poets Blog Talk Radio, and we are on a website called allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can follow along in the chat, read the poems with us, and make your comments. So I am your host, Afasiana, and with me I have our co-host, Babbler. Good evening, Babbler.
Hello. Good evening. How goes it?
Oh, it goes. It's like, I know you've been working way more than me, so I feel bad complaining, but it feels like the tension has been so high for like no specific reason. I think like the world is just on edge. So working with the public, I'm just like constantly expecting something bad to happen. I don't know. My anxiety level is like off the charts, but I have no particular excuse. How are you doing?
I'm neon exhausted. I've been working doubles now for, I'm not sure. It feels like a month, but I'm sure it's only been like 10 or 12 days. Yeah, and then I feel you on everyone on edge. Today was a weird day at work. Everyone, I mean, it was a lot of managing egos. Like, there was just, I don't know, the tension was insane today. Like, everyone just felt like they were about to pop off for whatever reason.
Yeah, that just seems like how it is, right? Yes. Everyone's working too hard. Everyone's, you know, worried about being sick. It's super cold here lately and wet. So, you know, I work a lot with vulnerable people, and they're cold and they're tired and they, you know, don't get rested. So tensions are just high in general. But I'm like, I don't know how you do it with the double shift, because one would be enough to kill me. To do it consistently, not going to happen. I said to my husband right before the show, I'm like, I slept all day and I'm exhausted, and I feel so guilty for being so exhausted because I know Babbland is so much more. But
oh, and then
life.
On top of that, I'm in the middle of a house project too. So like, I got home, and in like the hour that I got home and before the show, I've been spackling drywall.
No. You need to take a break once in a while.
Oh, I know. but you are also allowed to be tired. No one needs to be as tired as I am to qualify as tired. Like, I don't have any business being this tired.
Yes, you do. But it's just, you know, it's not a competition.
No, that's what I mean. Like, don't need to feel bad. He's entitled to being white.
Yes. I declare it that we all just get a week vacation. All right.
Yes.
So our quote that we wrote to you today, and by we, I mean our wonderful poets on the website, the quote is, "The curious paradox is that when I accept myself just as I am, then I can change," which was by Carl Rogers. And we had some wonderful entries to this. And I also have a bunch of carryovers from Double Helix, which is the show that I do with the Duke of St. Paul, Dax Bailey, on every second Thursday. So if we have some time after today's quote, which I believe we will, then we will also read some of those ones.
All right.
So I'm going to start us off by posting one by Ed Hunter. Could you read that for us, Babbler?
Absolutely. This is "Today I Am a Poet" by Ed Hunter. When you go on, I want you to know one thing. I'm a poet, your fool, the dolt, an ignorant, simple-minded cloud that will evaporate from your memory. 39 years ago, I was walking the beach in Venice, California, a young man beginning his dream in aviation. I walked the streets in Hollywood, set foot on the famous Hollywood Walk of Fame. This legendary memorial walk adorned movie stars, bearing the most prominent names in the entertainment industry. I was one person in a million, peering down on cigarette butts, gum, and homeless people laying on the sidewalk. These famous stars of the past look up at the curious men, women, and children gawking at them with bewilderment. A complex social, humanistic individual, confused from this utopian village set fire to my imagination. I was at a total loss for words, and yet the syllables kept pouring into my mind. While walking through LAX airport, I noticed a skinny little man with a beard and long dark hair. He was wearing a black sport coat and a matching marrow leather top hat with LT band. Under his left arm, He was carrying a gator trumpet case with locking latches. A quick double take, and to my surprise, it was Chuck Mangione, right there 2 feet away. He looked lonely, standing at the ticket counter. Wow, I bet he was wondering if he would make the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Today I am a poet, very euphoric, a bolt of lightning that lights up the universe. Do I really care what you think? End poem.
Great read, Babbler. And what an interesting poem, Ed. I really like that it calls out how this is supposed to be a glamorous place, and yet when you look at it, it's actually quite filthy with the cigarette butts and the gum and, the people living on the sidewalk. There's a grittiness to it. And then I like the way he says, these famous stars of the past look up at the curious men, women, children gawking at them. And just imagine that if you earn a star there, that you kind of think that you're being memorialized in a way that's really special. And in some ways it's an honor to have it, but that you're still just a mark on the ground that that so much happens on top of. And so to wonder if you're going to get that Hollywood Walk of Fame star as the Chuck Mangione, the musician, may have been, when really it's his art, his poetry, his music that is the lasting effect. And do we need to care what people think of that art to fully feel that our work has value? I find this very thought-provoking in its descriptions. Well done, Ed. What did you think, Babbler?
I really enjoyed this piece. I mean, so I was just in L.A. In early December, and I stopped by the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I was going somewhere, but I was walking through it. And this is a really kind of, like, accurate description of the disillusionment, you know. I was sitting there, and it was so weird because there's, like, homeless people leaning across one building, and this one guy that clearly has some kind of mental illness or psychosis or something going on as he wanders around, like, yelling with his pants half down. And yet I turn around, and there's a film crew. You know, and then I look across the street and they're doing an interview with a camera with live people on the street. And it's like the glamour intermixed with the filth and intermixed with like the poverty and the downtrodden is a really kind of bizarre mix. And I feel like it's caught here well. I also like that this disillusionment appears to have led to a complete career change. You know, I feel like he's walking down the beach in Venice, California, happy to be starting, you know, as a pilot, following his dreams. And then as he discovers, like, the dreams are kind of made of not what you think, you know, with the poverty and just becoming a bit more jaded and even realizing that Chuck Mangione in the airport is just a human being, like, he's just a person just like anyone else. In fact, he looks kind of lonely. And apparently he gave up that dream of being a poet. I mean, not a poet, being a pilot, and is now a poet, which he interestingly equates to being a fool, adult, and an ignorant, simple-minded cloud, which I found very interesting. I think it captures, like, the weirdness that is some parts of California, the just the seeing it for yourself kind of aspect. So I really appreciated this. It has a kind of interesting tone to it. It's like gritty and reminiscent at the same time, which I thought is a beautiful paradox, which ties in well to the quote that's at the top of the page as well. So I really enjoyed this write. So Great write, Ed. What do we have up next?
We have one by the poet, and I believe there's an audio, so I'm going to try to play that here.
The curious paradox is that when I accept myself just as I am, then I can change. For a man to change, he needs to want change, and as for the want, he needs to admit and accept that he needs to change.
All
and
right.
Audio.
Short and
sweet.
Short and sweet. I think this almost reads as a parable. I find it interesting that the title is almost as long as the piece, you know, the title being the quote itself, the curious paradox, that when I accept myself just as I am, then I can change. And then it's kind of followed with a statement, you know, for a man to change, he needs to want change. And as for the want, he needs to admit and accept that he needs to change. So it's just like, it's almost like a, you're not going to change if you haven't decided that's what you want for yourself. You know, I know a lot of people who work like in social work and dealing with people who need help, either from substance abuse or mental illness or things like that. And you really can't help someone who doesn't want to help themselves. Like, you just can't, you know, because you can't do all the work for them. So, I don't know. I found, like, this was simple in a nice way, and that it was very – it reads like a parable. So, nice brevity. What did you think of Faziana?
I think that you're right, that it has that parable feel to it. You know, it's full of wisdom. And I think what it does is basically rework the quote to make it understandable in a new way. So it's the same message, but it's just, it widens the audience and puts its own wisdom to it. So I think that it's amazing how in just two lines, it says so much. I'm really not good at being that succinct myself, so I appreciate when people can be. And our
great
next
comment.
Poem. Oh, you're welcome.
No,
thank you.
Go ahead.
This next poem is by Matt Jameson. And the title is, The Hardest Path is the Best Path. If you have a soft soul, you will be used by all. You'll be trampled, abused, and you'll feel their fuse and be kicked around like a ball. But one day, as you rise up, you'll awaken to your own call. You won't feel a slight or injustice or what's right, but the time to stand proud and tall. You'll grow in your skin and find it within and learn to walk for yourself. The past previous gowls will appear as mere fools, and you'll find a joyous new self. You'll find your own path and a smile and a laugh and wave at your history with sparkling eyes and a presence that defines what's new and should never have been. End poem.
Great read of Faziana. I really enjoyed the phrase, a soft soul. I picture almost like a ball of dough, which I think has some nice parallels to, you know, youthfulness and youngness and still forming, which I think is a great kind of allegory for childhood and learning about yourself. You know, I mean, it is unfortunate that growing a spine and knowing yourself here is kind of equated with hardening. I'd like to think it's still got a soft center, maybe. but, you know, it's a good point. You know, the more you know yourself, the less other people's opinions and insults and everything else holds sway. And you kind of realize just how ridiculous that all is. So I think there's really good nuggets of wisdom hidden in here that I think come from experience. So I think this is a wonderful write. What did you think, Ephesiana?
Something that you said there made me think of a Tootsie Pop, you know, with the soft center. I just picture that out. How many licks until you get to the Tootsie Pop? Sorry, that was a weird. but they always end up biting it, and yeah, okay. So I think this is, it's good. It starts off making me feel like it's a little cynical, which is justified, but it also has that idea of, with sparkling eyes and a present that defines what's new and should never have been. So it's not about, like, giving up when you harden yourself against things. It's about recognizing that sparkle within yourself and protecting it, but keeping it and letting yourself be firmly yourself and not kind of the doormat that shapes into whatever it needs to be, but keeping your own form and letting that shine. So I think it has, like you said, some wisdom in here. And it had quite the cadence to it. Like the meter just felt like lyrical. I don't know if it's specifically a type of meter. Like I wouldn't say iambic pentameter, but as I was reading it, it had that kind of pattern to it that it just felt like it was written specifically to read out loud. So well done, Matt Jameson.
Yeah, I also really liked the rhyme scheme. It's an interesting rhyme scheme because it has a mid-rhyme. So it's like A, B, C, C, B, which is not your normal rhyme scheme. But I liked it.
Yeah, I like unusual rhyme schemes. Sorry, I sneezed. Hopefully that wasn't in your ear.
No, I didn't hear it. I heard some rustling.
I tried to quickly mute.
Well, you
didn't. Okay, that's good. Didn't explode everyone's eardrums.
So what do we have
Babbler, we have one by Weaver of Dreams, and I see here that they did email me an audio, but I'm sorry, I didn't get that on time, so we're going to have to read it for you. And by we,
do
I
you want me
Babbler
to take this one? Okay.
Yes, please.
Let's try to read it in sync. No, that sounds like a nightmare. Okay, this is Different Drummer by Weaver of Dreams. I fight my natural instincts, trying hard to keep in step, ignoring the beating drum that only I can hear. While donning a persona acceptable to all, a discerning eye is the one thing that I fear. You might label me asocial if you saw through my facade, but the actress in me hides my lack of empathy. I change like a chameleon to deflect your piercing gaze as I mimic caring, compassion, and pseudo-sympathy. People come and they go, one-dimensional at best. Years have passed, and I know I don't love, I tolerate. Divorces and discarded friends highlight that fact. Although I don't hate, I merely denigrate. When I say I want to change, connect, and care, for the first time, there is every chance I could. I see myself through the eyes of those I've hurt, then beg forgiveness, as my heart knows I should. End poem. I really like this piece. I find it oddly relatable. There have definitely been times in my life where I've stood back and looked at myself, and I'm like, am I like, just like hardened soulless person? Like, I've come to realize that it's not really true about myself, but especially when I was younger, I was definitely a bit more bitter and had a much rougher shell. So but you know, I can relate to this in an interesting way. And I think it does a really good job of reflecting the quote, you know, coming to accept these things about yourself. You know, it's not easy to be like, I just pretend to care, and I don't hate anything, but I really just don't care. You know, that's hard to admit to yourself. But if you're going to change things about yourself, then you have to realize that just like everyone else around you, you're not a perfect person. And for me, at least, like, there are flaws that I'm willing to tolerate in myself and willing to accept about myself. And then there are other things that it's like, well, I need to fix that. You know, that's not good. That's something that I need to change. But if you don't realize that, then there's no changing it, you know. Yeah, like, you have to get through the denial stage to get to the next stage. And so I really liked this piece. Again, I think it had a really interesting flow to it as well. I can't really put my finger on it, but it had a kind of a sway, and then it these little off steps that I felt like really kind of meshed well with the theme, you know. Just like, although I don't hate, I merely denigrate. It rhymes, and yet nothing else is really rhymed. And so it kind of, I don't know, it made it feel more connected, like the realization had happened, if that makes sense. And then that even rhymed with the line, two lines above, and then tolerate. And I feel like it kind of gave it some rhythm that wasn't there before. So now that I'm really looking at it, I can see that rhyme scheme does work throughout, but I'm guessing maybe while I'm reading it, the cadence is off until I get to that point. But either way, I feel like it worked really well. It felt like it kind of got into a flow, if that makes sense. So I enjoyed this piece from Kate. What did you think, Faziana?
That line really struck me, too, with the internal rhyme, and it seemed like the rhythm did change there. Although I don't hate, I merely denigrate. That really stuck out to me. So I think you're right that it was a purposeful change as things changed on the emotional level there, where it was that recognizing of something within themselves. I felt like this was a really kind of brutally honest look at themselves, and that it's one of those things that is hard to do, to face your own flaws or what you feel is different about yourself, and recognize it. Like we say in the quote, to accept the change is how we are able to change. Sorry, to accept ourselves is how we are able to change. I'm totally saying it wrong. Basically, it was like, to know what is going on is the only time that allows us to move on if we want to. And I feel like this is recognizing that really well. It is a pre-write, but it works. I don't really relate to it that much, just because I'm the complete opposite, where I care way too much. And I kind of envy people who don't. Like, there's an appeal to this coldness, because I feel like I get super attached to absolutely everyone, and then I lay awake at night worrying about things that are like this person who I met one time and like shouldn't care. So I feel like it would be so much less exhausting not to care too much. So I'm a little bit envious, which is a weird thing to say, I think, about this poem, but I am. And I think that it's a cool examination of self. Now, I actually don't know if this is how Kate feels about herself for real. This could be just a story, but the narrator is doing some deep reflection, so I find that very cool.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who does kind of relate to this piece, I gotta say there's a happy middle ground for sure. Hardening yourself to everything and not caring is also weirdly numbing, and also induces quite a bit of anxiety. especially like imposter syndrome, like can they tell that I don't actually give a shit, becomes a concern.
I'm the opposite. I have to pretend I don't care so I'm not too clingy and weird.
Yeah. And I'm definitely the type that I have to pretend that I care. Otherwise, people are going to start raising some eyebrows at me for not caring about things that I should clearly care about. But anyway, middle ground. That's where everyone wants to be, I'm sure. All right, where are we off to next?
This is by Daniel Deschino, and it's called Water's Edge. This morning, I glanced at the back of my hand. That couldn't be me. This is the hand of an old man, and childhood was just yesterday. This morning was seconds ago. These thoughts threaten me, and all I can think to do is have a glass of wine and read a book in bed. My hand, cracked and weathered, like the sidewalk I traveled countless times. I coach, advise, guide, manage. It's my job. I guess it's my life. Yet, psychiatrist and doctor I seek to tell me about me. All I have to do is sit and think. It's just so much easier not to know the truth and stay the path. But do I really want me to be me 10 years from now? Water to give life, to reveal truth, on calm sea's edge. I stare down, not into the depths, but the reflection, the reveal, to see thyself, to witness fate. The man who does not see at water's edge drowns in its depths as he reaches beyond. And then the wind comes to propel my sails across the sea and breaks the still water reflection. And I remember, and the wind that breaks reflections might thrust me sailing into the night. End poem.
Excellent read, Ophelia. This is an interesting write. I really love how it takes the concept of, like, knowing something like the back of your hand and turns that into a self-reflection of not even knowing yourself. Like, what if you don't know the back of your hand? You know, what if one day it surprises you that it's not what you remembered? You know, and I like that, the taking an idiom and reimagining and repurposing it. I think it was really well done. I also really liked when it says, my hand, cracked and weathered like the sidewalk. I think this is a wonderful visual. You know, I think it really gives a good image to it, you know, and the weathering of time. And then, you know, just the monotony of life in that next stanza. You know, I coach, advise, guide, manage. Like, it's not, those are all actions. Like, they're all things that you do. It's not who you are, you know. So many times I think people do get lost in their jobs, you know, especially here where we value so much, people's careers, you know, you meet someone and so frequently one of the first questions you're asked is, what do you do? Like, that's the intrinsic value that you have to society is, what do you do? And that's not really the case, and it's not a really good identifier of self. So I kind of like that it's used here as, like, the basis for, like this is me, but it's not me. Because I think that's a really important thing to note, that you're not your job. There's so much more to a person than that. And then in the end, it's kind of ambiguous to me whether or not, like, they just die in the ocean or learn about themselves as they fall, which I find kind of interesting. You know, the man who does not see at water's edge drowns in its depths as he reaches beyond, you know, so walks out to the ocean to find himself and just drowns instead of seeing his reflection. You know, it's pretty dark. And then it's crossing to the other side. But then this is, the wind comes to propel my sails. Like, now a vessel, you know, I don't know if that means like free from the body, and like relearning themselves at the end, you know, as the transition from life to death occurs, or if it's like mid drowning, you realize who you are and are almost like reborn, almost like a baptism, in a way. So to me, the ending's a little bit ambiguous. I like either interpretation that my mind at least has come up with. So I'm interested in what you have to say, Faziana. But great write from Daniel.
Wow. Those are some really complex interpretations there, Babbler. And I like what you've said through all of it, but I don't think I got that complicated with it. Now I don't even know what to think. I forget my own thoughts, but they were not that complex. So I appreciate your thoughts on the ending. I can't stop seeing it the way you did now. I really liked the sidewalk part, too, that you pointed out. The hand being cracked, like the sidewalk. That idea of it being weathered, having traveled on it so much, that the hand, the skin would reflect how much the life experience has hit him. And the thing is that hands do actually tell a fair amount. You can tell if someone works with their hands, if they have like a physical labor kind of job, I don't know. I feel like hands do reveal a lot. I always got teased because I have, like, baby hands. Like, my hands are, like, chubby, like a little baby's. I don't understand. Even when I was thin, which I can't say I am anymore, when I was very thin, my hands were still, like, chubby little baby hands. So I don't know what to think about that. But lately, I am noticing that despite the fact that they're still weirdly plump, they are looking a little bit wrinkled, and I'm shocked by that. So I can see someone looking at their hands and reflecting on, like, this is not what I remember of myself. And I like what you said, Babbler, about how there's that saying, I know it like the back of my hand. Well, when you come to a point in your life where you don't recognize the back of your hand, then that is something where you feel like you don't know anything. And I think that's a striking thing, is to feel like maybe you don't know anything about yourself, maybe you don't know anything about the world anymore, and you start to question everything. So I feel like that's a really significant opening, to not recognize your own hand and to think of it as the hand of an old man. I have to reread the ending and think about it some more, because once you said all of that, I was like, I did not catch on to it all. So I'm going to have to review that after the show and give him a proper comment, because now I'm really curious about how to interpret that ending. So thank you, Babbler. I really like when your insights get me thinking about other ways of looking at it.
Cool. It's funny talking about hands, because I was literally looking, so when it was really cold, it was really cold here like a week ago, like really cold, and I was getting snow off my car, and I got into my car, and I put my hands on my heated steering wheel, which is super nice to have. Never had one of those before. I noticed I could see, like, the burn scars on the backs of my hands, which I hadn't seen in so long because they faded so long ago, and I could all of a sudden see them, and they were just kind of shiny. Like, they were just little spots of shine, which I guess my hand has never really been that cold. But it was funny because I was just sitting in my car just staring at the back of my hand going, huh, I can see the burn marks. So... back from when we used to keep on the wood stove all the time to keep the house humid so our lips and everything didn't crack, because all we had was the wood heat. So I steamed my hand more than once.
See, hands tell a story. Your hands, all the marks could you know, tell your story. It makes me think of, like, a palm reader, but not in the magical sense, just as, like, someone looking at hands and analyzing all the things that are in the past. I feel like a Sherlock Holmes kind of moment where he notices all the little things and can tell your story. My husband is a cook, so he has lots of the burn marks and the cut marks and like the, you can tell he's a cook by his hands. And he calls them kitchen hands because he's like, I don't need oven mitts, I have kitchen hands. So like, so I'm like, well, that's why you have kitchen hands.
If you use the oven mitts.
Then it wouldn't be so callous that you can't feel it.
Where are we on to now?
We have one by Martha Gettle, and I'm sorry, it's another one where I saw today it had an audio, and I need them a day in advance for it to get loaded because I'm not the one who adds it to the studio. So it goes through a chain of command, and I didn't get to do that fast enough. So I apologize, Martha, we don't have the audio, but we are going to read that for you. And Babbler, actually, if you can grab that one, I need to restart my internet, so that's just going to be a second.
I'm not sure. Get me 1 second to go hunt it down. All right. Is Learning to Like the Me in the Mirror by Martha Gettle. When I lost my husband, everything went black. All I did was spend my time looking back. When I looked in the mirror, I could no longer see the me that I remembered as being me. So many changes there met my eyes. The woman in the mirror I no longer recognized. I spent years trying to figure out who this woman was, and I wondered if her I could ever learn to love. I railed against this woman I'd become, you see. I hated looking in the mirror and not seeing me. But as the years went slowly past, I began to make peace with the me in the glass. I realized that I would stay the same. What I'd been through had caused this change. I began to accept the woman was gone, and from where I was, I had to move on. I began to realize she was not bad, just different from what I was. And I met someone who showed that there was still a lot in me to love. So now at last, with the passage of time, I can leave her and my past behind. I can look forward to the days ahead without that overwhelming feeling of dread. End poem. I really liked the message in this. You know, I think, again, it does a wonderful job of reflecting the quote itself. sorry, tickle in my throat. You know, and like, the way things that happen in lives affect us as people. You know, that opening line, when I lost my husband, everything went black. And all I did was spend my time looking back. You know, you can't just spend all your time living in the past. You know, there comes a point where you have to decide to live in the present, even in the face of, like, horrible grief and things like that. You know, so I think that's an important message, and to just coming to terms with the reality, and to become a more positive person. I like the rhyming couplets in this, and I know that Martha, a lot of times, sings her pieces, so to me, this one also feels lyrical and like lyrics. So I think, you know, it's a lovely write, you know, just about overcoming grief and moving on. Not necessarily getting over a person, really, but just learning to become who you are. So I think it's a wonderful write from Martha. So thank you, Martha. Ephesiana, are you back?
I am. And I think this is a... Yes. This is a powerful piece. It It's striking in how, like you said, sometimes you have to recognize your grief, and even though you're not getting over the person, you're getting over the way that the grief has impacted you to a certain extent, and there to see yourself and be angry that you're not full of life the way you once were, that you look so different, and she could see that she just was in that darkness because of her grief, and she hated looking in the mirror and not seeing the old version of herself that was full of life, but then recognize that you can't just wait until that old person comes back, until that one who is full of life is there again, because you have to recognize that that's not who you are anymore in order to get a new look on things and be able to start from scratch even. And I think that she responded so well to this quote, and you can tell it's a new write. It's even though the contest opened to pre-writes, she wrote this for the contest, and it fits just perfectly. And I have a lot of respect for this. It can be so hard to look at yourself in the mirror when you feel like you've changed. And whether that's, emotionally, mentally, physically, and sometimes it's a combination of the things. You know, when you're in a really dark place mentally, you can look different. You can see it. I remember when I was very ill, and I had half of my hair was gone, and I was full of scars. And what really disturbed me was my eyes. I could see that I was different. The whole image was disgusting to me. I couldn't stand looking at myself. But especially, I felt like my eyes looked so, like, vacant, like I was dumb now. And part of that was because the medication made my pupils all crazy. I just couldn't stand to look myself in the eyes and see that difference. So, I don't know, I felt... This kind of took me back to that. So thank you, Martha, for such a striking poem.
Yeah, it was a great write. I like what you had to say about it, yeah. But, I mean, I've gone through periods of grief in my life as well, and it is hard to kind of adjust to a new reality, and in a lot of ways it is like a new version of yourself, because your perception of the world has changed, I thought it was an excellent write. What do we have up next?
We have one by Mamya, and I don't even know if I can pronounce the title, so I apologize in advance, Mamya. Wu-wei. The way never acts, yet nothing is left undone. Keep your peace, even if the work is frenetic. Do not hurry thyself, giving yourself undue stress. Have few desires, live a simple life, embrace what is primal. The wellspring of life comes from within and will flow upon you, and in peace and acceptance can you mold yourself as clay in a potter's hands. End poem.
Excellent read, Faziana. I really like this piece. I didn't look up what Wu Wei means, but the combination of that, which appears to be, I'm going to guess, Chinese, and then the beginning being the way with the W capitalized, I mean, definitely makes me think of Taoism. And especially this piece has a very Eastern influence feel to it. You know, the way never acts, yet nothing is left undone, is a very Taoist perspective on things. Kind of that interconnectedness and that energy that's just, I don't know, it's hard to describe, but like being. So I really like that. And then just, you know, just knowing, just like being yourself and living in the moment and not worrying about was or what is going to be, but to just exist now, I think is just such a wonderful concept. And I really liked the stanza, the wellspring of life comes from within and will flow upon you. You just again, like just centering yourself and finding yourself and just letting that come forth into being. I think it's just a wonderful concept. And of course, the last stanza, you know, in peace and acceptance, can you mold yourself as clay in a potter's hand? You know, when you have inner peace and when you've accepted the things about yourself, you're much more free to form yourself and to see yourself in different lights. You know, it makes me think of the way you would sculpt differently with different materials. You know, if you're trying to sculpt, you know, like a harder or more fragile clay, like a different clay, you're going to fail. Like it's going to crack or it's going to shatter or it's not going to hold the shape that you want it to hold. But when you come to terms with what material it is that you're working with, then you can create something much more beautiful and elegant because you've accepted the boundaries and limitations as well as the possibilities of the material. So I thought that was a really wonderful final stanza. So I really liked the piece. What did you think of Asiana?
I thought it was beautiful. It had like this flowing feeling that was just perfect for its message. There's something light about the way that it was written and the word choices that give me like this kind of almost spa-like feeling of calm, and that's perfect for what it is. Because looking up the Wu Wei quickly, I saw that it was doing nothing as like an invitation to relax or to allow yourself to reach kind of a meditative state. You were right, because you said something about Taoism. It looks like that it's connected to that. So excellent insights, Babbler. This just feels like a beautiful inspiration to meditate upon yourself and think about who you are and how you can shape yourself by knowing yourself. So I think this is just a perfect response to the prompt, and it's beautiful. It seems to me like something that my craniosacral therapist would say, and she's like my guru of all things. She's my massage therapist in a special fix your organs instead of your muscles kind of thing. It's a medical procedure, but she also is like this very calming presence, and I can imagine her saying this, and it just makes me feel really good. So, Mamya, you're awesome, and as much as I rambled on, comparing you to Shauna, who is my hero, is a compliment.
I'm just imagining, like, getting life advice, like, during, a therapeutic massage, like, as someone who's had, like, muscle issues. Those massages are not always as relaxing as they sound. Sometimes they just downright hurt. But anyway, I'm just imagining getting, like, spiritual and mental guidance as like, someone digs into my hip flexor.
Well, cranio is a little bit different than that. Like, she kind of, like, pressure points your organs. So it can, like, it's mostly a gentler thing than the deep tissue, although she does, if you want, do deep tissue, because she has that degree as well. But yeah, it would be quite different than when she's holding your head.
Yeah, it was just it was an interesting moment in my mind for a second. All right, what do we have?
We have
next?
One by Diane D., The Wolf Spirit. And this was actually for last week's contest, but I had missed that message of permission until too late. So sorry about that, Diane D. You're a week late getting into the show, but we still want to share your work. So thank you for that.
All right. Do you want me to take this one away?
Yes, please.
All right. This is The Wolf Spirit by Diane D. Inside the savage hides a visionary who chased freedom to the tomb but failed to ever break the chains and died within a cage of bone dust. So the guardian of freedom met him on the moons of a quiet resurrection to foment the melding of two spirits from the beast to a perished human. Once the loyal one leads a revolution, the rotation of spirits would bestow a sacred figure to guide the human to the sentiment of its spirit animal. The grandfather of the spirit worlds institutes a deeper connection of intuition, instinct, and intelligence from the teacher to the after student. The passage from one realm of reality to the world of a spirit guide is brief and can only be mastered by the keen. So trust the wolf spirit. It's time to go. End poem. I really enjoyed this. It feels very Native American with the use of the spirit animal, you know, especially like Southwest, indigenous peoples. So I kind of liked that feel and that vibe. I also really, I know, just the line died within a cage of bone dust was just really fascinating to me. Just the idea of, like, bones ground, like, so fine that it's literally dust, within grinding down to find freedom to the point where bones are literally dust, like almost like sanded bits, I thought was a really interesting and kind of beautiful, but in a way macabre description. I just really liked it. I thought it sounded beautiful. And then I also liked the idea of like melding the two spirits, and the moons of a quiet resurrection. I just thought it gave it like this magical feeling. Like it feels very mystical or mythical. In just the phrasing there, I thought was really well done. I love how she gave the image a story. You know, we have this human skeleton embedded in the outline of a wolf. And I feel like this description in this poem just really kind of gives a background image to it that I really liked. And that, like, finding freedom is giving up the seeking in a way, you know, is handing off the baton kind of to the animal guide, to the spirit, and letting them tell you when it's time. I think is kind of a profound message, you know, in the not so much, you know, stop trying so hard, like stop overthinking and stop struggling and just let things happen and be guided by instinct rather than intent. I thought it was an interesting message and beautifully conveyed here. So I really liked this piece. What did you think, Faziana?
I loved it as well. I actually gave it bronze in my contest. I agree with you about that line, died within a cage of bone dust. That is a striking line. I also really like when I get to learn some vocabulary from a poem, and I didn't know foment. At first I thought she meant like ferment, and I didn't quite get it, so I looked up foment, and it actually means to instigate or stir up, and usually it's an undesirable or violent sentiment. I think that that was a word that I was completely unfamiliar with, and I love getting something new to add to my vocal arsenal. So thank you, Diane D, for that. And the idea of it combining the spirits from the beast to a perished human, and perished human is just excellent wording right there. You know, it's not a human who has passed, a human who has died, a corpse. It's a perished human. There's something about that word that just fit here really well. And the idea of following your intuition, and that passage from one realm to the other is brief. It's a journey, but it's over before you know it, and you need to, go with it when you can. So I thought this was a magical piece. I really enjoyed it. So I'm really happy that we got to use it, even though I made a mistake last week and didn't use it. So I really appreciate you letting us continue to make that contest last, because that was a three-week contest. We got so much wonderful poetry from that art, and I'm really happy that we got such great responses. Now, here we are. We are at the poems that were originally intended for Double Helix, which is the other show that I host. And it was a vague contest. It was basically share a poem that digs deep into your own identity, flaws, or the complexities of your personality. So it's quite a mix of poetry, and you get to see all different kinds of perspectives, and I really enjoy that. I just realized I already did that one. Here we go. So this one is by Scraps and Scribbles. Here we go. Gently Now by Scraps and Scribbles. The starlight trapped in tears don't change the taste. I only lost a few of them, I swear. The morning got the best of me in haste and wet my hazel eyes caught unaware. A warm and tender kind of salt, so soft, those diamonds breaking easy on my lips. In memories, your fingers take them off, or catch them on your own sweet searching kiss. A part of me forgets I'm on my own. A part of me can feel your presence there. Then something moves, and sharply, I'm alone. It disappears. Such things and tears aren't rare. I only lost a few of them, I know. They taste of salt, feel like afterglow. End poem.
Excellent read, Aphasiana. What an interesting and tender piece. I believe this is a sonnet in format. But I really like the wording and the reminiscing in here, you know, just the examination of tears. I really appreciated the line, a warm and tender kind of salt, so soft. I can just imagine that, you know, like those warm kind of tears that are still grief, but it's like the kind of grief that happens when you're remembering something happy, from maybe someone who's not around or something that'll never happen again. Those bittersweet kind of tender tears. I think this captures that feeling so well. I love them. I also really liked the lines Then something moves, and sharply I'm alone. It disappears. Such things and tears aren't rare. You know, the callback to reality, and yet also a nod to, like, the frequency of how often, you know, tears can come, which when you're in the throes of grief can be really quite often. I'm an interesting case. I think I probably cry less than most people. But when I am struck by something, especially grief, I can cry for long periods of time. So it's, you know, kind of an on-off faucet kind of person, I guess. So it just kind of makes me think of them, think of that. And then, of course, that last line, they taste of salt and feel like afterglow. I think really kind of, again, pokes at that bittersweet memory feeling. Especially, I guess, when I'm done crying and I feel emotionally exhausted but better, you know, and then I usually nap and wake up and my face is a puffball. But there's something about the expression of crying that is so emotionally relieving. And I think this captures it wonderfully. I think this is a beautifully emotive rite, which in my mind is just exemplary poetry. So I think this is a really great rite from Scraps and Scribbles. What did you think of Eliana?
I agree. I think you're right about it being a sonnet. It's definitely one of those more formal structures. It has the great rhythm to it. It has wonderful rhyming, and it just flows. But I think that last line is what really brought it to life for me the most. They taste of salt and feel like afterglow. The afterglow, the key word, like, I feel like that's the title I would give it, Afterglow, because it's about how even after the relationship is gone, the person is gone, whatever this love was, there's still that essence of it that is influencing them, that is still there, making you feel connected and good, even though it's sad. A part of me forgets I'm on my own. There's that little bit of love that's still experienced in those moments between consciousness. And someone said, I can't remember who, it's like a famous quote of, grief is just love, that, or it's something about how you realize that grief means that you had a love worth having. If you're sad that it's gone, it means that you had something positive. And that afterglow of these tears is such a beautiful way to look at it. So I think this is a really emotional and beautifully worded piece by Scraps and Scribbles.
Great comment, Faziana. Yeah, I guess that does also come to mind. The quote I know, and I don't know if it's the exact one you're thinking of, is where there is deep grief, there was great love. And I think that's so true. And I think this touches on that really well. Because you don't cry over things that you don't care about. Yeah. Like, you know, you just don't. So they're proportional. So excellent comment. What do we have up next?
We have one by Myriad Dark. Could you read that one for us?
Absolutely. This is Spaces and Other Places by Myriad Dark. I've seen the pain and sorrow in one life to last a whole lot more, and the visions seen inside my head lay strewn outside my door. There are too many things upset the balance and leave their mark on me, and the truth is often hidden deep, too deep for me to see. I have felt the world closing in on me, filling up the darkest place, and the way we shout out all our sins that are screamed into my face. Well, it's enough for me to run and hide. There's too much angst hanging around, and if we tried to tally up the score, there'd be more bodies to be found. I felt the past closing in on me and striving me apart. For all the reasons I can't explain, it still leaves me in the dark. And yet we still stumble through this maze, getting more twisted up inside. And as we make excuses for ourselves, going slowly out of our minds. Now the dream is over for this time. And for now I'll say goodnight. Don't be tempted to take one more look. It will jam you up so tight. There are days and there are days when the music just won't start. And it's those in those moments of deep despair when I feel so torn apart. Take this time for self-reflection to make some progress here. If the words won't come onto the page, they never ever will appear. I've seen too much to take notice, so I'll ignore this time around and sit this dance out and watch a while as the rest go round and round. End poem. I really enjoyed the piece. It felt very sad. You know, it felt like rough days, basically. It felt like depression. In some ways, just feeling lost, you know, and kind of a negative lens, like the opposite of rose-colored glasses. I don't, you know, like gray tone or sepia or something. You know, and just those harder days, you know, I felt the world closing in on me, filling up the darkest place, you know, just feeling enclosed and that everybody shouting in their face, you know, and just feeling the world is too angsty and too angry and just feeling lost, kind of the theme I got. I really enjoyed, oh gosh, let me find that line. There are days and days when the music just won't start, and it's in those moments of deep despair when I feel so torn apart. You know, to me, it just feels like how I feel when I'm in like the depressive state of my bipolar. You know, like it just drags, and there's nothing, like, it's so hard to find anything to cling to smile. You know, like, if I get one smile out of myself that isn't fake as hell for work, then it's a better day than most in those days, which, you know, come and go, fortunately. That's usually what I end up clinging to, is just reminding myself that this is temporary. You know, but it's a pretty dreary piece, you know. It's about, like, the harder times in life and sitting it out for a moment, you know, which I think is an interesting and reflective thing to do, you know, to realize, hey, I'm not well. I'm really struggling. I'm really having a hard time. And to have the state of mind to be like, I'm going to pause. You know, I'm going to take this time for self-reflection and really think about myself and to see, you know, and just pause for a moment. Just give yourself a break. So I really liked it. I thought it was wonderfully done. And I think it captures, like, the pain of depression in almost a humorous and lyrical way, just the way it's described. It's not like ha-ha funny, you know, but I guess just the way it's described, it feels like almost musical to me, or lilting in a way, just the way that it's written. I think it's probably the rhyme scheme gives it that little bit of the occasional rhymes in here give it that kind of feel, which I think is good because I think it brightens up the piece a bit more and makes it in a way more palatable. Not that it needs to be, but I think it does serve that purpose. So I thought this was a wonderful write about delving into the darker topics. So thank you, Maria Dark. What did you think of Asiana?
I think you're right that sometimes when you word things in such a beautiful way and you make it rhyme and flow, that can make it more palatable in its pain, that people can digest the deep thoughts and be able to process it without getting too overwhelmed by the emotion of the darkness that's put into there. I really liked in the first stanza when it said, "And the vision seen inside my head lay strewn outside my door." That just makes me think about how sometimes when you're depressed or anxious, it can feel like difficult to leave your house because it's just, it's overwhelming. There's too much negativity and it just feels too hard. And so to see it lay strewn outside my door makes me think like all of that, the darkness, the negative stuff, the metaphorical bodies of everything that's wrong are just piled up so high outside the door, like snow in a blizzard that blocks off your exit. And you're just like, well, I guess I'm just going to stay in home at home and in bed today and just be in my depression. I don't know. That's what I thought about when I read those two lines. And then later on, it says something about, oh, where is it? When the music just won't start. And that is that kind of feeling where you're waiting for life to begin. You're like, okay, so when this happens, it's going to be fun. That'll be the signal. When I hear my song, I'll dance. You're just waiting, and you're in this limbo for something that gives you that excuse to be happy, and sometimes it just doesn't come, and you need to find it within yourself. So that line struck me.
I really liked your comment about the beginning of the piece, you know, the vision that's in my head lay strewn outside my door. I guess for me that was like, you know, when you imagine every negative scenario that could happen, and then when they happen, it's like, oh, well, of course, you know, that kind of thought. So anyway, excellent comments, and I loved hearing your insight. What do we have up next?
We have one by We Are All Gonzo. It's called Stone Cold Sober, and I have an audio for that.
Unattended withered flowers.
Wilting.
Unintentional wreaths decorating stone. Fiery velvet caught below crumbled sediment.
Filthy.
Rest assured ransackings by those well known. Empty abyss as endless hunger sits, trembles writhe, sudden twitch. Purpose and passion not in fashion, melancholy nihilist awaiting satisfaction. Despair, an unwanted bride, cursed to saunter, heaving stride. The longer somber, be mine prize, settle best in an indebted life. Earthly demise assured of cure, losing memories of all endured, scratching prayers, rending flesh of my love to a testament. Beyond bloodshed and brutality, woeful thoughts finally surround me, instructing ever clear of mind, seeing fractions of mortality. Have I soundly resounded to find society's strict expectation of sobriety? What a wonder it would be to see a dragon cage itself. Here to view an audience of three. I, me, and myself.
Fascinating, SoundCloud. Really enjoyed that. It was really more of a performance. I really loved it. So thanks for sending that in. We Are All Gonzo. I really, you, this piece felt very gothic, especially in the performance quality of it. But then, you know, just looking at the title, Stone Cold Sober, you know, definitely sets the tone of the piece and I think settles what would be kind of an ambiguous message if it didn't have the title. So I think that's the hallmark of a really well-done title. You know, this piece being about sobriety and the difficulty of that, especially when I look at the stanza, empty abyss as endless hunger sits, trembles, writhes, sudden twitch, purpose and passion not in fashion, melancholy nihilist awaiting satisfaction. You know, just that constant want, you know, the constant battle with thinking about something that you shouldn't have, you know, knowing that the consequences of indulging are, you know, far not worth it, like just, but still craving that thing, I thought was really well done, you know, and I think it gives it, you know, the beautiful darkness of it, and I also really loved that last stanza, you know, what a wonder it would be to see a dragon cage itself, you know, to view oneself as like this magnificent beast, and yet to hold back, to view sobriety or, you know, the struggle thereof as caging oneself, you know, and the only person observing are all, you know, just yourself. So I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was dark, and I think it really did a good job conveying the struggle of battling substance abuse. So, wonderful write. Ephesiana, what did you think?
I really enjoyed it, and I have to agree that the audio was a performance. It was intense and so well articulated. I can see that it was also entered in a Halloween contest, so that might be part of the gothic feel to it. I loved it. I loved the way that the music fit it, and the reading voice was wonderful. Another thing to note is he left me a message saying that he tried to make it look like the shape of a needle. So if you look at the poem, it is shaped in the way that the spacing is done. And he said that it was supposed to be a needle in relation to, like, the sobriety. So that's an interesting touch as well. He wasn't happy with how that shape came out, but I think it's a very cool touch to add. And that it's a challenge to make it into a shape while still focusing on the writing, so the writing doesn't suffer in order to meet the form. And I don't think the writing suffered at all. I think that it flowed very nicely. In the line, purpose and passion, not in fashion, it made me think about how there's this weird pressure to not care about things. I remember, like, as a teenager, I was the nerd, right? Like, so I liked knowing things, and you're not supposed to, like, be the eager one raising your hand with all the answers. You have to kind of play dumb a little bit to fit in. So the purpose, not in fashion, made me think about that, because, like, I don't know, I hated that you had to, like, pretend not to be interested in a topic. And then also passion not in fashion made me think about how you're supposed to play it cool, like kind of hard to get. When you like someone, you can't just like call them right away or something. Like, you're supposed to have that distance, which I think I alluded to earlier, I'm not good at. that part, purpose and passion not in fashion, struck me as, like, you have to hold yourself back and not be as out there as you might be. You have to resist all the things. And while I'm sure he meant very different things than I just said, there's, you know, we all have our vices. I think that he did such a cool job here, and I really liked the dragon part that you already touched on, Babbler. Wonder it would be to see a dragon cage itself here to view an audience of three, I, me, and myself. So that made me think about how when you, like, lock yourself in rehab, when you put yourself into that situation, and it's the dragon kind of choosing to be slayed, to get rid of that what feels like power at the time within yourself, that's I can't even think of the words, but to cage that part of yourself is a difficult choice, but it's an important one too. So I think that that's a really important subject to write about, and I like that usually the saying is me, myself, and I, but it's worded differently here. Mm-hmm. I, me, and myself. Something about that switch just makes it even more interesting.
Yeah, I felt like that switch made it almost kind of grating, because it's not what you're expecting, which I think works well with the theme of the piece, because it was almost kind of off-putting, because it wasn't what you were, you know, the order you wanted it to be in. You know, I feel like at least something in my brain is like wanting to rearrange it, you know, and it's like almost a little bit anxiety inducing to be like, no, that's not the right order. So I can, that was where my mind went. And I totally relate with you to the, you know, wanting to say, ooh, me, me, me. Cause I was definitely that kid. I used to joke with my mom all the time that if I ever wrote my own biography, it'd be titled Anyone Other Than Brooke. Because I heard that so much in school. Because I would always throw my hand up if I knew the answer. And I was a very smart student, and I knew a lot of the answers. So I can't tell you how many times I heard that. Like, does anybody know this? Anyone other than Brooke? it was like the punchline of my youth. Like, oh, okay, well.
That's a great title. You got to do that, the autobiography.
I mean, that came up so much. It really kind of followed me for quite some time. I'm sorry, I was excited. but I relate on that note, so I thought that was an interesting aside.
All right, well, I'll be looking for that book. I want you to have the red shoe on the cover.
Oh, okay. It's not going to be filled with poems that you would think, though. Most of my poems are pretty dark.
No, I know, but the red shoe is in a lot of your dark poems.
It is, because I always wore red chucks as a kid. And I spent quite a bit of time staring at my feet. So it's kind of it really does tie into a lot of my memories from my youth. And the reason I always wore red chucks is because at the time, Converse shoes were $12 a pair. And then for some reason, when I was like 20 or something, they became very popular and much more expensive. Now I'm like, $45. These were the $12 special at Payless. I don't get it. So I'm like,
because it's cool and retro now.
What? I'm like, they all have to hold them together with duct tape. Like, why are these so expensive? Anyway, just, you know, just me.
Okay, so the spine of the book has to look like duct tape is holding it together. I'm your publisher now.
Okay.
We now have a poem by I Love Poems, a.k.a. Salwa.
à la forme. I am who I am. Je suis qui je suis. I'm a passenger in a strange life. Besides, captive of my upbringing. However, it taught me beautiful things. Close to my children. But I made mistakes. But my love is real and my sacrifice is alive. I'm an altruist. The pain of others becomes my pain. My heart joins their story without any regret. This is too much attachment, is inevitable. I live it day after day, yet it causes me sorrows. These unexpected pardons, no hate in my heart. My book, its pages are open, vulnerable since escape. Je suis une passagère dans une vie étrange, d'ailleurs captive de ma formation. Toutefois, elle m'a appris de belles choses. Proche de mes enfants, mais j'ai commis des fautes. Mais mon amour est réel et mon sacrifice est vivant. Je suis une altruiste, la douleur des autres devient ma douleur. Mon cœur joigne leurs histoires sans aucun regret. Ce trop d'attachement inévitable, je le vis jour après jour. Pourtant, ça me cause des chagrins. Ce pardon inattendu, pas de haine dans mon cœur. Mon livre, ses pages sont ouvertes, vulnérables, sans échappement. End of poem.
Beautiful SoundCloud. And I really, this write, I think it's strong and it has strength in its vulnerability, if that makes sense. There's this beautiful acceptance of self in this, you know, just saying that this is who I am. Like, I am an altruist. Like, I wear my heart on my sleeve and I empathize deeply with other people. And sometimes it causes me great pain, maybe even a lot of times, you know, like it hurts. Because when other people hurt, I hurt. And also when people hurt me, I hurt. But there's no regret. Like, it's accepting and being okay with that pain because what it means about them as a person, you know. I can handle the pain because I'd rather be a soft person than a hard person that can't empathize with other people. I think there's really great strength in that, you know, like understanding that that softness and that tenderness and that connectivity to other people's emotions can really be a strength and an asset. And the pain, while a byproduct, is also a symptom of being that kind of person. And I think that's the kind of person that a lot of people are or wish they were or aspire to be. You know, I don't think too many people are like, you know, empathy, gross. You know, like that's not really a thing. But there is pain associated with having empathy, you know, for feeling deeply what other people feel, you know, to pick up on those feelings and to be that vulnerable. Because, you know, there are, of course, people who take advantage of and cause harm when they see and identify a person who is that level of empathy. But I appreciate that there's no regret here, that there's just acceptance, that no hate, and just, you know, acknowledging, like, being this type of person and feeling this type of way is going to cause me pain. However, it's also, you know, one of the things I love most about myself. So I think it's a beautiful piece and a wonderful write. What did you think, Daisiana?
I really like it. I think it, in many ways, it's the opposite of one that we read earlier, where it was talking about not caring and feeling like they should. It's mm-hmm. This is about feeling, about caring too much, but also kind of liking that. I think it's a beautiful feeling. It like you said, there's strength in that vulnerability to say that you're that open and you're gonna take everyone's story and capture the pain of that and take it on yourself without regret is so strong. I connect to this because I do tend to take on other people's pain, but I do regret it sometimes. So I'm not as good as a person as so. I think that she does such a beautiful job, and I'm amazed at how she manages to make it sound beautiful in two languages. Like, her French is absolutely gorgeous, but her English is also fantastic. She managed to translate it and keep it beautiful. And to write poems in multiple languages is so tricky because it, you know, so much of it is word choice and rhythm. And to make a poem sound good in two languages, to make a song sound good in two languages is so challenging because it changes the amount of syllables. It does all kinds of things. I have tried to translate things, and it is tricky when it's written in a format like this, but she does a fantastic job at it. She always makes it beautiful in both languages.
Yeah, I am not bilingual, so I would have a really tough time writing a poem into languages, and then, yeah, just making it flow, I imagine, is very difficult, especially since words don't really translate directly a lot of times. You have to find a synonym that still captures the feeling that you're going for. I can't imagine the challenges of that, and I think it's just beautifully done here. So a wonderful write. What do we have?
I used to read cereal boxes in both languages because I wanted to compare if it was saying the same thing in both, and I would get like, aha, if it was different. And my mom was like, why does it matter? It's just like a little like slogan thing. And I'm like, because they're saying something different. So, you know, little know-it-all that I was, I had to be like snippy about the fact that they changed it very slightly. But that shows you my petty little nitpickiness about language, and I can't do that at all with her pieces because she just is masterful in her translation. So
I would do something similar for Spanish. I'm not fluent in Spanish, but I know quite a bit of the words, and so I can tell when it's not the same thing. So just because I know enough about what they're saying, like I know enough verbs and nouns. The real reason I'm not fluent in Spanish, by the way, is mostly because I suck at verb conjugation on the spot. And so then I just freeze up because I can't think of how to conjugate it. So everything I would say would be in like singular present tense. So that would sound really stupid. And I'm aware of that. That makes sense.
Yes. Oh, I totally understand. I'm sort of like that in French. If I have time to, like, write it out in an email or something, I can do it. But on the spot when I'm trying to talk to someone, no. I can understand. They can talk to me in French, and that's fine. But my own trying to say something, not good. I read to children in French at the French school sometimes, but that's fine because if it's written out, then I know how to say it. So, like, I can do it if I'm reading it, but I can't think of the, like you said, like the conjugation of things on the spot unless I'm drunk. For some reason, I honestly probably still mess it up terribly, but I don't care. So then I can speak because, you know, it's just like if you're not all anxious about the details, you can do it.
That's funny. That's probably it. Just ease some of that anxiety. Exactly. I can read Spanish, no problem. And if someone is speaking to me in Spanish, I'm going to understand probably like 80% of what they're saying. And that last 20%, I can usually figure out by context. what they're saying. And I know enough Spanish to ask them. I didn't quite get that. Like, can we try again? But, yeah, no. And I can't really speak on the spot because I can't conjugate the verbs naturally. So then I end up just freezing up and being like, no say. it doesn't work out. Because I know that if I were to try to speak on the spot, I would literally say, instead of like, would you like to go to the store in half an hour? I'd be like, I go store half hour, you come? Like, you know, and I'm like, wow, that sounds terrible. Like, I can't say that.
But you got your message across.
Oh, well, yeah. but I don't end up saying it at all because I know that it sounds stupid, so that I won't say it. So I don't know. I think if you took me and you dumped me into a Spanish-speaking country, I would probably become fluent in a fairly short period of time, just out of necessity. But because I don't speak it actively every day, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I tend to, like, if I'm speaking it, it's because, like, the French immersion school is coming to visit my library. So I use it as, like, a teaching experience for both of us because I'll be, like, I'll have, like, a felt story where I'm telling them as I hold up the pieces. And then I'll be, like, en français, and I'll ask them, so they'll tell me what the word is, and then I'll use it in the context. But, like, I get them to tell me. It's a trick. I don't know the answer, but, yeah. I glance at the teacher to make sure she's not like, no, that's not right. All right. Our next poem is Crossing the Field by Arlist. The chill in the air haunts the black stones washed clean by the tepid river. It flows past cottonwoods that carry their mortal burden. On their heads they speak only in sign language, mincing words a human could not say. The ice flows have melted. The rain stopped. Little moisture, but my belabored breath. Crossing the field, pheasants take flight. Field my scurry. The chill means nothing to those ensconced in the earth. I have left and returned, smelling of honey and smoke, aromas of belonging, but I cannot say where. I have eaten the bitter fruit of not being there. I carry my mortal burden on my back, wet with winter's chill. Fires line the woods. The pond glazes over. I look far afield, but must camp alone. End poem.
Excellent read, Faziana. And what an interesting piece. It has a very naturalistic tone to it, you know, looking at the environment, you know, just the description of the environment in winter, you know, and just the river and the cottonwoods and all of the natural observances. And yet there's also this tone of longing and loneliness and isolation, you know, but also tucked within it, this feeling of being in the right place. So it's like solitary but comfortable, if that makes sense. It feels like contemplatively alone. It's almost like a meditation while looking at the natural environment. You know, I have left and returned smelling of honey and smoke, aromas of belonging, but I cannot say where. You know, home, so being far from home, like being out of a comfort zone, really. You know, and then I look far afield, but must camp alone. You know, so just this feeling of loneliness and isolation and not feeling at home, but also observing everything around you, and kind of feeling, well, not at home, but kind of part, I guess, is the vibe I get. It's a really beautiful piece. you can just easily picture exactly where they are. You know, the cold and the river that's melting and the different wildlife really paints this gorgeous scene. And then to take that lens back on the narrator and kind of place them in the setting, you know, as kind of beleaguered and isolated and, you know, this isn't their home, but this is where they are kind of a feel. I thought it was really beautiful. So I enjoyed this, you know, kind of almost nomadic by necessity. It's kind of how it feels. So a wonderful write. I really enjoyed it. What did you think of Paisiana?
I really enjoyed it as well. It reminds me a lot of this novel that I read about 6 months ago, The Barren Grounds. And it is, a lot of people have compared it to Narnia because it kind of has like this magical natural world where the animals speak and there's only, I think, three humans who go and experience it. But they go into this place and they're experiencing nature as it was before humans messed with it. And except that it's winter all the time because summer was stolen. And they go through and they're describing things. And this just has that feel where I feel like I can picture the barren grounds from the book. And it's just beautiful imagery that is described with such feeling, like that carry their mortal burden on their heads. They speak only in sign language. Like the way that it's describing nature is so full of depth. I love the lines, but I cannot say where I have eaten the bitter fruit of not being there. The bitter fruit of not being there. That is just a powerful, powerful phrase. I feel like I could think about that particular line for so long. And the idea of smelling like honey and smoke, honey and smoke are two very different smells, but there's this natural kind of feeling with both of them that just makes me feel like I'm camping in the old school kind of sense. I actually do Viking reenacting camping, so we go totally old school, only things that they had back then, and honey is one of those things that, you know, we make our alcohol out of honey, we make everything out of honey, it's our sweetener. So having the smell of honey and the smoke of the natural fires, just it creates this atmosphere, the tastes and the smells. This is beautiful, beautiful writing, and really creates that sense of setting. Now,
yeah.
Here we go.
I also feel like it just really creates a beautiful sense of place. I did like you pointing out that line too. I have eaten the bitter fruit of not being there. You know, there's just really a lot said there. You know, and it's open ended, and there's so many different ways that that can apply. But I think it's just a brilliant line. It's wonderfully done.
Agreed.
So what do we have going on now?
We have one by Jabbo. Can you give that one a read?
Yeah. This is Musings on Getting Old by Jabbo UK. I used to touch my toes with ease when I was young and fit. I can still do it if I please. I just sit down to do it. I'm lucky I've retained my wits. The years have been so good. It's sad I can't do the splits. But hey, I never could. I've had my 3 score years and 10 a few more years beside, but I can still employ my pen, though I can't turn back the tides. I'm thankful that I have my sight, for scribbling is a habit, and when I get the chance to write, I use both hands to grab it. The years go by, and as they fly, the more they seem to plunder. Can't run and jump, but I don't cry. The world's still full of wonder. I'm not yet in God's waiting room. Well, not quite anyway. So I can see my flowers bloom and still have time to play. Though you may think I'm in the queue to pass that pearly gate, I'm not ready to go through. St. Peter, he can wait. Who cares that I am getting old? Not me. I'm having fun. I will enjoy these years of gold, a bonus, every one. But when that bell it tolls for me, I will not fear its strike. I've lived a life both full and free. What is there not to like? End poem. I really enjoyed this piece. It's so lighthearted, and so fun, and it has great humor to it. It's a little bit wry, but it's very smiling. Like it's a happy piece, and you know, it's about aging. And so often you hear pieces on aging are mostly about loss or about reminiscing about things that were nor but are no longer, or they're about looking down the throat of death. But this isn't. This is really a very present piece. You know, it's about enjoying life as it is now. Like, yeah, I'm getting older, and life's not what it used to be, but it is what it is right now, and I still have joy in it, and I still have these things happening, and life has changed, but it always changes, you know, so what's new in that? So I really enjoyed it. There's a lot of positivity here, you know, a lot of enjoyment, which I think is wonderful. I think there's maybe not enough poems about this. I think in a lot of ways, the aging society views as such a negative thing. You know, oh, you're getting old, you know, and it doesn't have to be, you know, like there are ways to like honor aging, and ways to appreciate aging, and it's just changing that perspective on life, which is really, you know, I think it's a bit of a shame how often it's used as a negative thing. Whenever my mom kind of complains about getting old, I always like to remind her gently and in a funny way, of course, that, you know, it's a privilege. Not everybody gets to grow old. You know, so enjoy having the years that you have. So I really like this. It's not often I see an upbeat piece about being present in maybe what is not viewed as youth. Although life is so short, it's really all youth. So, wonderful write. What did you think, Faziana?
I loved it. I really enjoy Jabo UK's writing. She has such a, like, full of life sense of humor. It rhymes. It has this very sweet flow to it. And yet you can tell she's, like, a sassy lady. She has this kind of little bit of a bite to her, but in the best possible way. I like when she says, it's sad I can't do the splits, but hey, I never could. It's like, you know, I can't do all the things, but you know what, that's okay. When she talks about writing, I like that she says, I'm thankful that I have my sight, for scribbling is a habit, and when I get the chance to write, I use both hands to grab it. She's so enthusiastic, and there's just feeling in this. Like, I can imagine the way that she speaks and the life of her. She seems like someone who just glows, just absolutely full of life. You know, saying she's not in God's waiting room. She's still out there experiencing everything. And like you said, like you're growing old is a privilege, and she recognizes that, a bonus, every year. Now she figures this is a bonus. This is the icing on the cake. I've lived my life, and now I'm just enjoying all these extra years. There's such optimism in here. It's absolutely beautiful. I really hope I can be like this when I'm older.
Me too. It's a wonderful outlook. Like, it's all gravy. All right. What a way.
I was going to do this one, but I actually don't think we have time. It's too long. Let's see if there's a really short one. No, they're all long, the ones that I have left. So I don't think we actually have time, because I want to be able to give them proper due of us commenting. So I'm going to carry over the other ones that we have left. So if you're waiting, listening, hoping that we'll read yours, it will get read, just not tonight. But we definitely will get to yours. So the next Part Sinner, Part Saint contest is not quite up yet, but I will make one tomorrow after I judge some contests, because I have so many contests going, it's not letting me make a new one just yet. But, you know, I am the contest guru of having a million contests at once, so thank you for your patience as I get those together. It's actually a really good thing that all poetry limits you on how many you can do, because I might go a little crazy with it. I do have a contest up for my other show, Double Helix, so please do check that one out. It has quotes from John Green, and actually, since I have 2 minutes left, I'm going to read you those quotes. "My thoughts are stars I cannot fathom into constellations." John Green. "I just give myself permission to suck. I find this hugely liberating." John Green. "I am not in the business of denying myself the simple pleasures of saying true things." John Green. I love his quotes. I haven't read a whole lot of his books, but the ones I have enjoyed. He writes a lot for teens, like The Fault in My Stars, Paper Towns, Looking for Alaska, Turtles All the Way Down. He has a lot of novels that have actually been turned into films as well. And just his quotes about writing are inspirational, I think. So please take a look at that contest and get us some rights. Late Night Poets has a show almost every day. I think is every day. Always keep an eye on our boards and see what you can contribute to, because we like to have your voices in our shows and on our contests. So whether you can give us your actual voice or give us your voice through your writing, we do appreciate your contributions and love to share what you have written. Thank you to everyone who wrote for my contests and who gave us permission to share your writing. Thank you, Babbler,
everyone,
for being an awesome co-host. And I hope that you get a more restful weekend than your week has been.
Oh, please. And you too. Rest up. Today was Friday.
Okay, good night.
Good night. Bye.